Welcome to the Global Heart Podcast. I'm your host, Pablo Perel, Senior Science Advisor at the World Heart Federation. I'm joined today by our co-host, Raul Santos, Editor-in-Chief of Global Heart. Hello, Raul.
Hi, Pablo. Hi, everyone. Great to be here.
So today, we are discussing our new World Heart Federation cardiac rehabilitation roadmap. We will discuss two linked papers, the WHF roadmap that was published in Nature Reviews Cardiology, and a companion paper in Global Heart focused on implementation aspects of this roadmap. To discuss these papers, we are delighted to welcome Professor Julie Redfern from Bond University and University of Sydney. She's a member also of the WHF board and also a past emerging leader of WHF, so we are very happy to have Julie. And also, we have Sydney Smith, who is a professor of medicine and cardiology at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and also WHF past president. Importantly, both Julie and Sid co-chair and led this expert group writing these two papers. Julie and Sid, welcome to the Global Heart Podcast. We're very happy to have you.
Thank you. Great pleasure to be here, Pablo.
Yep. Thanks, Pablo and Raul. Really nice to be here.
So we are very looking forward to have this conversation with both of you about this really important and exciting initiative. And as usual for our audience, we'll put the link to the two papers below the podcast. But I would like to start with a very basic question, if you want. Maybe I'll start with you, Julie. You spent some time in the paper talking about the term cardiac rehabilitation. So can you tell us what is cardiac rehabilitation and what is the novel aspect that you include in your definition of cardiac rehabilitation in the WHF roadmap? So Julie, if you want to go first.
Yeah, thanks, Pablo. I mean, I think that's obviously a fundamental, important question. And cardiac rehabilitation is typically known as a program that people can participate in after they've had some sort of heart event, you know, typically heart attack or other forms of heart disease. It's been around for 50, 60 odd years. People usually attend and get sort of risk assessment and then, you know, receive some education, participate in some group exercise, usually goes for about 6 to 8 weeks. And hopefully sets people on the right path to recovery. And, you know, just to sort of preempt the next question. So we know these things are good, and I'm sure you're going to ask us a little bit more. But where we wanted to go with the new roadmap in terms of what's different is to really sort of make sure we're redefining these programs to be inclusive of all forms of cardiovascular disease, not just those typical heart attacks or after bypass surgery, but all forms of cardiovascular disease. And also to think of these programs as a more entry to lifelong cardiovascular health. So trying to move from sort of 6 to 8 week programs into sort of how are we going to help people live their best lives for the rest of their life? So I think that's probably the fundamental sort of difference we're trying to move from the traditional cardiac rehabilitation sense.
So it's in a way you're more ambitious and you're broadening the population on one hand and also the kind of, yeah, how comprehensive it is in terms of it's a lifetime approach. And
correct, yeah. So broadening it, you know, yes, across conditions, but also having a more lifelong approach to that length of things, yeah, as well as some other things. But yes, that's probably the fundamental key difference.
And maybe for, I mean, our audience include, I mean, maybe many experts of rehabilitation, but many of them, they might not be experts. What are the key components of rehabilitation? You mentioned briefly, but if you can summarize that.
Yeah, I mean, great question. I'm Australian here in Australia. Only last week we published new core components. There's other countries around the world also have what we call core components. Essentially, you would have your risk assessment, your multidisciplinary team. So, you know, delivery by teams of, you know, nurses, doctors, maybe, you know, allied health providers, exercise physiologists, dietitians, things like that. But then tackling the various risk factors, depending on what's happening with different people. So how do we help people be more active? How do we improve people's diets? Things like tobacco smoking and those other forms of cardiovascular disease risk factor management. And then sort of exercise is a key part, helping people sort of get back to being more active, return to their everyday lives, and then follow up with their doctors. I suppose they're, the core components. There's a variety of things, but that's sort of the nuts and bolts of it.
Yeah, Pablo, could I hop in here and just emphasize the fact that cardiac rehabilitation, although it started out with a great interest in exercise physiology and resuming exercise, is much broader. It involves a comprehensive approach to cardiovascular risk factors. And as Julie has said, that involves taking the medications, controlling blood pressure. It also involves looking at psychosocial issues that may. Smoking is another issue that comes up. So a very broad approach, and broad also in the fact that we want to be sure that other groups, not just people who have had heart attacks, are included. Heart failure, peripheral artery disease, stroke, all of these now become. And I think another very exciting part of this was extending it beyond just in the United States, it's a 12-week, 3 month, 3 times a week, 36 visits. But not after it's over, going home, and that's the end of it. This is the beginning of an entry and a commitment to long life. And that begged the question on the group, which I think is very important, what are we waiting for? As someone who spent 50 years in the cath lab, just moved away, I can't help but ask, why wasn't something done before this patient had a heart attack? So the idea of taking high-risk populations before they have their heart attack and luckily survive and doing something there. So it's really, in my opinion, I see the strength of this as a broad global approach to improving cardiovascular health and trying to move some of the skills that we have applied in those high-risk groups that have had events, broadening that.
You know, see, this is amazing, because we're talking about prevention, right? We're not only talking about telling someone how to exercise or increase physical activity after an MI or, and actually this is much broader. And actually this has been one of the biggest challenges that we have nowadays in cardiology, because we have the means to reduce the burden of disease. We have amazing drugs to reduce blood pressure, cholesterol, platelets. We know that exercise is important. We know that stopping smoking is extremely important. And now we have all these things on social, psychosocial stresses, environment, and everything. And sometimes it's pretty complicated to put everything together. And definitely, one thing that I noticed that Julie said is about the professional team working together, because otherwise the physician won't be able to fix all of that. And my question to you is, okay, we already knew about this, but why we needed the roadmap? Why we needed a document like this? Because the roadmaps, just for the audience, they're not guidelines, right? They're, let's say, they're a compilation of the information, and they really try to come to something to, let's say, implement the science. And also, to implement that adequately, we have to understand what's going on, right? And we have different realities. Brazil is different from Australia, from US, from Cameroon. So this is how it is. And so why we need a document like this, and how was it developed, and how you propose to really try to make things happen?
Well, it's a good question. One of the reasons behind it is to look at global standards, best practice, develop and disseminate these broadly. And also create a database, begin to look at how we're doing globally. The approaches may differ from country to country, but the standards and the ideas need to be there. Training clinicians, looking at the different approaches in terms of which healthcare professionals and even family members, as we've seen in some African approaches, can be involved. So to bring together an idea of process, maybe even consider certification process as we move forward. But I think the development of global standards, ideas, concepts, and the variation that can occur from country to country was a very important approach, a part of this.
Thank you. So I have participated in some of the roadmaps from WHF. And one thing that we do is to really try to understand the situation and how it is in different countries, right? Because it's very heterogeneous. So, Junie, can you talk a little bit about What are the main roadblocks that you guys assessed on the implementation of a rehabilitation program, and as broad as it is now, because as you said, it's not just exercise or physical activity, it's much more. So can you talk a little bit on this roadmap that you have, roadblocks that you have identified, and how to try to, let's say, overcome these barriers, implement what you're recommending?
Yeah, I mean, I guess just before I go there, to tell you sort of how we got to where we did with the roadmap, which I think is very common with the World Heart Federation roadmaps. We put out a survey all around the world to sort of get some input and ideas, and we got, I think it was around 350 responses to that survey. And then in late 2024, we actually held a global forum in London before the ESC meeting, and we had 40 odd people came to that from all over the world. It was absolutely fantastic. Getting ideas about what people felt the roadblocks were and the potential solutions. And involving the World Heart Federation in those solutions was a key part of one of the solutions. And so that's where we sort of started. And then World Heart Federation was very supportive and came on board. And I think one can't estimate the importance of the World Heart Federation being behind this area in terms of trying to improve it. So, in terms of what you said, you're entirely correct. We know these programs work really for the people that go, but we also know the vast majority all over the world of people don't go, even when a program is available. And obviously, a lot of countries there isn't even programs available, as we know from some of the people that attended our forum and our writing group in some of the lower middle income countries. So what can we do? Well, it's interesting. Even in the high income countries, by its own sort of definition, the term cardiac and the term rehabilitation does come with a sense of cardiac being one form of the patients and rehabilitation being a short-term thing. It has traditionally, I did want to sort of pick this up, adding to what Sid said, it has traditionally been quite a group-based thing. And you're right, the multidisciplinary team is very important, and being a group-based thing where people go to the hospital at 10 o'clock of a morning, 3 mornings a week, and participate in exercise is a positive for many people. But it also is inhibitory for many others. Some people can't get to the hospital, some people don't want to go to the hospital, sometimes there isn't a program. So I guess one of the other key elements, so that in itself is a roadblock. It's interesting. So a roadblock, I guess, an enabler for some, but a roadblock for others and in certain locations. So one of the other big elements that we speak about in the roadmap is balancing that with having a more personalized, actually a more flexible approach to how we might help people through these programs or have alternative models available for people. So what are the roadblocks? We've touched on a few of them. Some is that very, not very personalized. Not having enough workforce knowledge and capability and money, not having enough sort of finances to run the programs in certain areas, not having enough flexibility in the way we deliver programs. We expect to set up a structure and the patients attend that structure, and that is in itself inhibitory. But also another big roadblock is a lack of sort of advocacy and awareness by patients, by clinicians, by stakeholders, by policymakers about the importance of these programs. So advocacy is, I guess, one of the other, or lack of advocacy is one of the roadblocks. So I might leave it to Sid to talk about sort of some of the solutions, but there's some of the areas that we sort of try to dive into and tackle more, I guess, that traditional framework. How do we move that forward to be more contemporary and help more people?
You already touched into some of the general strategies to overcome some of these roadblocks. But maybe, Sid, you can give some of the examples and solutions that you touch on the roadmap that you think that potentially could be adapted and scale up as solutions.
Certainly, I'd love to. But before, I want to emphasize something that Julie mentioned, and that is the importance in this document of advocacy, and that is stressing the need both from physicians and caregivers and also families that cardiac rehab should be supported, that we need this. Two things about that. One, had the opportunity to participate in the PASCAR meetings last year, and the room was packed, and it was packed not only with people in cardiac rehab, but also with interventional cardiologists who were interested in this. And one of them has been able to develop support that really, if you have a cath lab, you should have cardiac rehabs there supported also. I cannot imagine a surgeon replacing a hip and not having the patient go to rehabilitation. And the same is true for the heart. Operating on the heart and then leaving the patients to figure out what comes next is not a complete approach. So advocacy is absolutely critical.
Sorry, before you go into the solutions, as you mentioned, you've been working on this for decades, many decades, and it's a privilege to be talking with you. And we were talking before about maybe the lack, particularly for new cardiologists, and in general, they like to go to the more complicated conditions and technical things. And sometimes, even from a public health, we all agree, and I think everyone agree, the importance of rehabilitation and prevention in general. It's not so exciting. But you were just saying that you have a room packed. Has been this changing, you think, over the years? So more people are interested in cardiac rehabilitation and prevention than it has been in the past. Do you see a trend to more interest? And what can we do to make it, if you want, more attractive to younger generations?
Well, I think first of all that there are some factors that contribute to that. Firstly, cardiac rehabilitation is frequently not well funded. So funding to support this is absolutely crucial. It has to be considered a part of patient care. Also, Julie mentioned, and so it's so important that we think of this as a team approach. Not just a physician who happens to be interested in exercise, but exercise physiologist. We have pharmacists in our team. We have actually a psychologist working with people participating, talking about issues that they have, about fear of another heart attack and so forth. Dietitian, nutritionist is a very important part of the team. What should you be eating, and where do you go to find the right food? What is a good diet? So the broadening of approach has resulted in bringing more people into it. And also what started out as an interest in exercise, the studies now have shown conclusively that cardiac rehabilitation improves long-term outcomes. So why do a procedure and not get the best from it? And that's what leads you to the need to take these patients and eliminate the risk factors that got them into the cath lab. Or into their procedure so that they don't come back again. And then that thing that I added in the future is why are we waiting for them to come in the first place? There has been a great deal of advance in terms of identifying patients who are at very high risk. Why not get them involved in lifelong cardiovascular health? It's absolutely key. So we've had, I think, the broadening of therapy that's available. Back in the 70s, we didn't have statins, if you can imagine that. So now we have statins. We know that patients that take this, the medications that we had in 1970, the existing hypertension medication dealt only with diastolic hypertension, JNZ2. So it wasn't until later that we began in the 80s and 90s to begin to see that we had medications for systolic hypertension. The availability and interest in using medications and broadening therapy has occurred along with some refinement in exercise. So I think you've got a lot more people interested, but I still want to go back to the fact that it must receive funding and it has to be considered part of the total practice. Now, the trainee, the allure of getting into the cath lab, of doing something and seeing it done is undeniable. And that is very attractive. It's a longer term involvement to change behavior. That's a big challenge, and nurses are much better at that than physicians. They have more training, more academic background. So the broadened team and looking at training and changing behavior is important. So we've got to do more than just that immediate pleasure satisfying of putting in a stent and seeing blood flow go through an artery again. I think having more people available and the broad recognition has contributed to stronger interest in trainees.
That's really interesting, and it's very interesting also to have the view of someone that has been, as I said, working for so many decades. We were asking before, Sid, if you have any potential solutions, if you have some examples of strategies that worked in, and you summarize some case studies in the roadmap that can be adapted and scale up as solution as some of the barriers that Julie mentioned before.
Sure. Oh, I'll start with let's go to Africa. Let's go to Malawi, where Lilian Mbau there has put together a program which is in my one of my areas of interest. It's sort of a hybrid program. The patient goes to an exercise center once a week, and then the other 2 times a week, there are caregivers at home that are trained in assisting them in exercise and that type of thing. And so what we begin to do, which I think is absolutely essential, I'd like to see more of it in the United States, you incorporate the home environment into what's happening to the patient. The patient doesn't go to an expensive rehab facility 3 times a week and come back to a family that wants to know why they're eating different food and what are these exercises. The family is involved. The family that is involved and concerned about losing that patient for a heart attack now has a way to get involved. They are potentially helping with the exercise or working with the diet with them. So I think this hybrid approach that has been used in Malawi can be very effective. It's sort of a spoke and hub where you think more of outpatient involvement with family and caregivers outside. And caregivers in the community can be involved in this. We have to think uniquely beyond physicians. Yeah, with the hub, it's providing the central experience, but beginning to get out and involved. And that, I think, will have a greater continuity beyond 12 weeks in terms of changes that are made. Now, in China, they've looked at a spoken hub and begun to look at registry and getting to the point of what are we doing? How are we doing it? What's happening? It's just one other approach to overcoming some of the barriers. But around the world, this I have to say, the writing group was amazing, and I think it came from work by Julie. That 350 or so survey really brought in people that were not going to be on a committee, but people who were living with this problem and wanted to see and knew changes that could be made. And so the committee in these two documents really contributed and came from environments where we could bring in some of these different strategies. It was a really great pleasure to work with them.
Yeah, you've done a great work on bringing people from all around the world and experts and passionate as you are on rehabilitation. And I think that shows on the to our audience. I really recommend to read the two papers, and you have a lot of case studies that goes beyond the abstract concepts to concrete examples as the one you mentioned in Malawi in China. But moving to maybe to the second paper, because this roadmap already has a companion paper that we published in Global Heart, and we're very happy with that. What does exactly, Julie, this second paper add? Can you expand a little bit on that?
Yeah, and look, I mean, I'm really excited about the second paper, to be honest. I think one of the things that's a challenge for the World Heart Federation and when we produce these kind of roadmaps or similar papers is, well, how are we gonna, what are we gonna do then, and how are we gonna really try to implement this? And this is something Sid and myself, as the leaders of this work, really want to strive. I'm also secretly, Pablo, really excited that this enabled three of our early career researchers to really drive that implementation paper. What does it add? Well, it goes a bit deeper into the more practical side of things, a little bit more, and what can people pick up. It also digs a little bit around a framework around implementation and how people might structure it. And also we go into a few ideas about research, which is always important as well. So we sort of tackle those things. We give some more detail, more sort of research ideas and some framework around some more practical implementation things. So enabled some leadership by our up and comers, as it were, which we really enjoyed that Sid and I could sort of help mentor. And now what we're going to do just before the World Congress of Cardiology in Rio, we're going to hold another symposium to really try to push people how you're actually going to implement this in your region. So I think the two papers are really nice together and something actually I'm really excited about, to be honest.
That's great, Julie. So, and also, I'm very happy that you mentioned that we're going to have a satellite before the World Congress of Cardiology in Rio from 8 to 10 of October. And actually, the Brazilian Society of Cardiology is working very hard with WCC to really have a nice meeting. And I'm definitely convinced that this symposium is going to be very, very important. But see, just a very practical question to you. I think the world nowadays is much on implementation, right? Because we must have ways of making things happen. So how should it begin? How should implementation of these new recommendations begin, and how can we make the difference with the recommendations?
Well, yes, and I think the fact that there are two documents here, the first, the guideline, the roadmap, don't just read about it, but do it. And here to help you do it is a second document, which is on implementation. So how to put it together. And that's where you're leading with this question. The first thing is to develop the team that's interested in the hospital. You've got to have the people that are going to be doing it. And secondly, you have to raise patient awareness. So, in addition to having the people ready to go, the team trained, you've got to be sure that the patients know that this cardiac rehabilitation or lifelong cardiovascular health is there too, and they need to be referred to it. So, the people that do it, the referral to it, and then the support for it, and that is facilities, the programs, the support by insurers and funding for it. And I think in Brazil, I've been so impressed with the projects that I've done in Brazil. The SUS actually funds, I think it's 80% of healthcare in Brazil. And so the key thing for us was a dialogue with the government because they're very interested in seeing that the SUS programs provide good care. So and wherever you deliver healthcare, you've got to find out who the funders are and who is responsible for making this happen, facilitating it financially. And that's where advocacy comes into it, the public, the patient, whether it's a patient in the hospital saying, "Why haven't I been referred to rehab?" Or the interventional cardiologist saying, "Why don't we have a rehab? How do I get my patients there?" To the community, the funders saying, "We've got to make this available." So I think that's a really important thing. And then there are contextual considerations that come up. For instance, I actually have recorded on my iPhone several years ago. I was in Shanghai. I was out running in the morning. It was 7 a.m. and I came across a group of older people, more women than men, that were dancing. It was beautiful. They were out in the public in the area in Shanghai dancing, and I stopped, and it was a cardiac rehab group. These were people with heart disease that were exercising together in a way. I mean, there's yoga, there's dance, there's Tai Chi. There are a lot of ways other than getting on an elliptical trainer that people can do. And the more we have appropriate exercise and appropriate diet consults, the more effective we'll be in getting to lifelong cardiovascular health, which is what we want.
Thank you, Sid. And again, I invite our listeners to read the two papers, and I'm sure you'll get a lot of information. And there are opportunities, as Julie mentioned, at the World Congress of Cardiology, jointly with the Brazilian Society in October this year, to keep discussing with them. One thing I love about your leadership, Sid and Julie, is that both of you are not only passionate about this and you learn a lot reading the roadmap, you both do a lot of implementation yourself. Sid, you were mentioning, I know you work in China, but also a lot of research. I mean, Julie, you just got like a really big grant to continue doing research. So you can still do advocacy for something, you can implement. At the same time, there are still research questions on how to do it. So, and you manage, I think, to bring a lot of people together, which is not always easy in cardiology, from different regions. And I think it's a really good example. And I hope in the roadmap you mentioned the gaps that we have. I'm convinced, actually, not, it's not only that. I hope that these two papers will help to reduce that gap. So thank you again for your leadership. We need to finish now, but before we finish, we always like to ask our guests, because of the scope of Global Heart and this is global cardiovascular research. So we want to, in one sentence, if you can tell us, and there is no right or wrong answer, what do you understand by global cardiovascular research? So maybe starting with you, Sid.
We need to evaluate innovative models of care and delivery that and join together to share ideas. That's and some sort of global registry. We need to share experience and implement. That's the research. Global cardiovascular health is a different concept, and that is a broad awareness of reducing cardiovascular risks. And this is part of the NCD goals, for 2030. But I think the research where we need to do is to look at innovative models. And we see examples of that in these two papers. Not only what should be done, but what can be done that's innovative. And we've got to have some assessment of, after we start innovating these things, what's happening. I also have to put in a word for the World Heart Federation for allowing, sponsoring this work, bringing this together, and also to you, Pablo, for your work in, as a science chief science officer. It's, I just what's happening there is incredible in terms of supporting global activity, and you've been a major contributor to this work along the way. I think that the World Heart Federation is the answer, bringing it together.
Yeah, I think WHF, and you are past president of WHF. Our strength is, I mean, all the people like you, like Julie, like Raul, contributing with your expertise and keep growing. And of course, it's a result of so many decades of experts with this passion and knowledge. Julie, you want to give your brief definition of global cardiovascular research? And as I said, it's very personal. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what a great question. And it's not something I really thought about before, but I love it. So, global cardiovascular health, obviously, is we all have our vision at the World Heart Federation and what we're doing. But what's the research? What's global cardiovascular research? I guess that's how can we do better at making, realizing that global cardiovascular health for all. That was what I would say. And that includes all forms of research. And yes, my end of research is implementation. But to me, that's the research that makes the global cardiovascular health a reality for everyone. And I guess for me, I'm quite passionate, Pablo, that there's not really a silver bullet here, actually. Different countries, different people, different times. We need a variety of things in our medical bag, as it were, and we need to be flexible in what's going to work best for different people. So, how we do that, I don't really see one necessary solution. But yeah, that's the research, Global Heart. It should be, hopefully, and is publishing the research that helps us realize global cardiovascular health for all.
Yeah, and maybe Raul, I think it's good to do some self-promotion of Global Heart. I think we feel like we are the place for global cardiovascular research and particularly in rehabilitation. I think Raul, we can invite people interested in that to send papers to our journal. What do you think, Raul?
Definitely, they're most welcome. And I'm very happy as editor of Global Heart that our journal is increasing, is improving. Our impact factor was raised, citations, and actually we're very active in really advertising the things that we publish because I think we can make the difference. And especially because it's broad, right? We get point of views and science from all over the world. and really trying, we're committing to really have great science and of course advertise it in a good manner.
I was just going to add to what Raul said about, and I think it's important that I haven't sort of said it. I'm very passionate, Pablo, about all the different professions. So I think global heart, I'm not sure that a lot of our cardiac rehabilitation clinicians and researchers might necessarily think of global heart as somewhere to go. And that's great to hear. And I think that's something if we should encourage people to do, and I will do what I can. But I think this area is a really important area for these different types of health professionals and health workers with all different skills. This is an area that embraces all that clinical capability, not just your traditional cardiology. So I did just sort of want to mention that, and I think that's a real opportunity and something we need to be doing more if we are going to help everybody in a financially efficient way and a practically efficient way. So that was all. But yeah, let's get some of our cardiac rehabilitation community, and I will do what I can heading towards Global Heart with some of the amazing work that's coming out.
Thank you. And Julie, Sydney, thank you again for the discussion, and Raul for co-hosting the episode today. We learned a lot about cardiac rehabilitation, the challenge, but also the hope of how we can turn these recommendations into action in cardiac rehabilitation programs. To our listeners, we will put, as I said, the link to the two papers in the show notes, and please remember to subscribe wherever you listen. And thank you, as always, for joining us on the Global Heart Podcast. Bye for now.